So this talk is based on the text, The Way of the Bodhisattva, and this is based on the book by Pema Chodron called No Time to Lose. We study this book in our little Zen club book club in Seychelles that I belong to several years ago, and it's a really nice way to study this kind of a text. And then I had the really good fortune to attend a weekend retreat in Seattle with Pema Chodron. And she chose to do the two chapters on anger. And I remember by the time the weekend was arriving, I was thinking, I don't want to drive all the way to Seattle. And it was late July. It was beautiful weather. And I was probably wishing I hadn't even signed up. But I was really glad that I went, partly because Pema Chodron is a really wonderful teacher. And also the material is so worthwhile. And I had this idea that it was good to learn about working with anger, but I didn't consider myself an anger type. But since that time, I have come to be really grateful for these teachings of Shantideva and have discovered that, lo and behold, anger is a very pertinent issue in my life. And I actually have the MP3 recording of that weekend in Seattle as well, which is great. So I've been listening to it again and reminding myself of all the great advice. Our sister Sangha in Bellingham is studying this same text right now for their practice period, but they are using His Holiness the Dalai Lama's commentary, which is called For the Benefit of All Beings. And it was actually after a phone visit with a Dharma buddy of mine from Bellingham that I was reminded of this, of Shantideva's text, and thought it would be useful to share a part of it with you. And although Shantideva's text, The Way of the Bodhisattva, was composed a long time ago, more than 12 centuries, this text is still very relevant. And this text in general it was actually written as a guidebook for bodhisattvas who want to alleviate the suffering of themselves and others. And another thing I learned more recently was he didn't write this to expound on it or give it as a talk. He actually wrote it for himself to help him, give himself advice to keep on the path and to give himself encouragement. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Shantideva. He was an 8th century Indian who was born a prince, and he was the oldest son of the king, so he was heir to the throne. And he was described as being a student of the Mahayana Buddhist teaching and was very diligent in his studies. And he developed a very strong connection with the Bodhisattva Manjushri through teachings that he received from a wandering ascetic. His father eventually died, and this is apparently what happened. The night before he was to be enthroned, Shantideva had a dream in which he saw Manjushri sitting on his throne, and Manjushri said, "My son, this is my seat, and I am your teacher. How can we two sit on the same seat?" And Shantideva interpreted this as a message that he shouldn't become the king, and he fled, leaving his home and everything behind. And he went to Nalanda, and this is was a very famous Buddhist university at that time in India. And apparently, Shantideva was not well regarded at Nalanda and was considered to be lazy and not diligent at all. I think they really didn't know who they were dealing with, as in fact, he was a very serious student, but he studied on his own, and he didn't join in the debates and the classes that were being offered there. And he was already quite realized when he arrived in Nalanda. But his fellow students conjured up this plan to have him be invited to give a talk to the entire university. This is a very big university, an honor that was generally accorded to only the best students. They thought that he would be shamed and humiliated and leave Nalanda. Another version was that they hoped to motivate him to study by embarrassing him. So the talk he delivered that day to the university was The Way of the Bodhisattva, also known as Bodhicharya Vatara. And the teachings were personal, relevant, poetic, and fresh. And although the content wasn't unusual or new, the way he delivered it was very powerful, and his words are often quite beautiful. So I chose some verses from the chapter called Working with Anger to share with you. You could also name this chapter Cultivating Patience, as this is the most effective way of working with anger. And as you may recall, patience is one of the paramitas or perfections that we talk about in Buddhism. And just a word about Shantideva's choice of words and language. He sometimes uses harsh or jarring language, but think of it as a tool for getting our attention, making us sit up and take notice. And I actually tried, I tried to pick ones that weren't quite so in your face. So, in the first part of this chapter, Shantideva spends some time convincing us of the downside of anger. So this is the first verse. Good works, gathered in a thousand ages, such as deeds of generosity or offerings to the blissful ones, a single flash of anger shatters them. Now, Pema Chodron says about this verse, many people have trouble with this verse, particularly angry people. So Shantideva is making a very strong point here that anger has disastrous consequences and long-term consequences. And the good works he mentions here would be the various merit-making activities of offerings, giving alms and donations to worthy causes. But this may be pretty superficial, especially if practiced by those who do it solely to accrue merit or for self-importance or to hide their shady business deals. So the positive effects are easily wiped out, in this case by anger or aggression. And most of us have experienced the experience of someone losing it or going off on us, and it can take a long time to trust that person again, even though they may be very reasonable most of the time and very generous. And if someone frequently becomes angry or loses their temper, people aren't comfortable around them. They don't trust them. No evil is there similar to anger, no austerity to be compared with patience. Steep yourself, therefore, in patience, in all ways, urgently, with zeal. It might be more helpful to replace the word anger with hatred in that first line that says, no evil is there similar to anger, especially as it's used here. Anger can be motivated by compassion, but hatred is always fueled by ill will. And there's a rigidity to hatred, and it tends to be, hatred is something that we fixate on a person or people. So examples of this would be racism, genocide, bigotry. So in this verse, Shantideva is pointing out the benefits of patience and the harm caused by anger. And notice that he refers to patience as an austerity and points to the courage that it will require to refrain from acting out on our anger. Anger is referred to as a klesha, and I'll sometimes use this term. Klesha is a Sanskrit word for kilesa, which is the Pali, and it is translated as neurosis, affliction, or defiled emotion. So kleshas are strong emotions that reliably lead to suffering, and this would include anger, greed, jealousy, arrogance, resentment. I'm sure you could make up a list of your own. Those tormented by the pain of anger will never know tranquility of mind. Strangers they will be to every pleasure. Sleep departs them. They can never rest. So here Shantideva is referring to the physical effects of anger. When we get angry, we get stupid. We can't see what the situation needs to be cooled down, and we tend to make it worse. And a comment of Pema Chodron was, it's like we put kerosene on a fire. It's like putting kerosene on a fire to put it out, which is what tends to happen when we get angry. We escalate the problem, and we lose our perspective. And not only do we lose our perspective, but we don't see we see things through a negative filter. So we become strangers to every pleasure. We don't see the beautiful blue sky. We don't hear the birds singing. And as for anger affecting sleep, we probably have all experienced the agitation of anger to the point where we can't rest or relax or sleep. There are two suggestions for working with anger that are given here. So number one is sort of at the time to get in touch with how the anger feels in the body, which is usually not what we do. Sensitizing ourselves to the physical anguish that this causes us can motivate us to commit to working with our anger. Number two is after the event. And this can be done during meditation. We can replay a situation when we've gotten angry, and then it's just to feel the feelings and thoughts, and then notice how they may escalate the anger or fuel your judging mind, or we become obsessive about our thinking about it. Then you take the actual feeling of anger as the focus of your meditation. You can give it your full attention without either indulging in it or repressing it. And then to experience that anger non-verbally through the senses, does it have a color? Does it feel hot or cold? Is there a smell? Is there a taste to it? So these are just little methods you can use to work with anger. Noble chieftains full of hate will be attacked and slain by even those who look to them for honors and possessions. From family and friends estranged and shunned by those attracted by their bounty, men of anger have no joy, forsaken by all happiness and peace. So these verses refer to abusive parents, bosses, supervisors. People are afraid of these people. They're not liked or trusted. And because of their powerful position, we who have bosses and parents and supervisors, we do what we can to survive. We butter them up. We might even lie to them. But they don't get any love or affection by those people that they are superior to. And most of us have had the experience of having to tiptoe around someone because you're never sure when they're going to lose it or go off on you. And these verses are really to point out to us that angry people are not happy, but more importantly, how anger affects the angry person and those around them very negatively. So, getting angry makes us suffer, makes us stupid, affects our sleep, and on top of that, people don't like us. Especially that's for those of us who tend to anger easily or often. So now we come to the crux of the problem. Getting what I do not want and all that hinders my desire, there my mind finds fuel for misery. Anger springs from it, oppressing me. Getting what we don't want and not getting what we want is what underlies our anger. It sounds so Buddhist. Just as the second of the Four Noble Truths says, desire is the cause of our suffering. We desire something and then we get attached to having that thing and feel like we have to have it. We even justify our wants and reinforce them with our thinking. And we might get angry if something gets in the way of our having it. And getting what we don't want is the flip side of the coin. We want to push it away or get rid of it. And again, we reinforce this with our stories. When we give in to our preferences, our likes and dislikes, this can lead to suffering and in some case escalates to violence and even to war at times. The skillful thing would be not to get hooked in the first place by our likes and dislikes. Shenpa is a Tibetan word that is translated as attachment, although Pema Chodron refers to it as the non-conceptual feeling of being hooked. It is the charge behind emotions and the sense of me. And the way we might be aware of the Shenpa is a feeling that things aren't going our way. And if we can be aware of this, we can stop the process that leads to outright anger. However, if we are already angry, we can still practice with this by not acting out or speaking out of the anger. This is practicing patience, and it takes courage. So come what may, I'll never harm my cheerful happiness of mind. Depression never brings me what I want. My virtue will be warped and marred by it. This is Shanti Deva's enthusiastic way of reminding us to realize that everything in life is workable and that there is no point in indulging in depression. It doesn't help anything. It is a reminder to practice by dropping our storylines and coming back to whatever is coming up in our bodies and minds. This is a description of patience from the book, according to Pema. Learning to relax with the edginess of our energy. And this is what we feel when we don't act out from our anger. If there is a remedy when trouble strikes, what reason is there for despondency? If there is no help for it, what use is there in being sad? Getting stuck in a traffic jam is a good analogy for this verse. If you can get off the freeway onto a ramp, then do it. There's nothing to be angry about. If you can't get off the freeway and there's nothing you can do, what is the point of being angry? It's ridiculous, and it makes us suffer. I don't get stuck in traffic jams on the Sunshine Coast, but I do drive for work along the highway between Seashelt and Gibson's, and I can get quite irritated when I find myself behind a slow driver. It's not easy to pass other vehicles on that highway. So recently I was stuck behind a logging truck that was going really slowly. And I remembered this verse, and I reminded myself about, you know, the idea that I can either do something about, like pass him, which I couldn't, or if there wasn't anything I could do, which was the case, there's no point getting angry. And you know what? It really helped diffuse my anger, even before it really started building. I remember being quite kind of surprised. It seemed so simple. And I realized, too, that a lot of the time when this happens, we're really dealing with habit, what I call habit energy, you know. You do your usual. It's like someone pushes a button and you do your usual, and, you know, the stories start going. And so it's pretty interesting when you just, it gives you a little bit of a gap, too. It gives you the opportunity to just kind of stop the process, and that can help in itself. The Karna folk, devoted to the goddess, endure the meaningless austerities of being cut and burned. Why am I so timid on the path of freedom? This is part of the text aimed at helping us reframe our attitude towards pain or discomfort. And this is because as we cultivate patience and refrain from acting out or speaking out, which is our usual habit, we're left with edgy energy, which is very uncomfortable. Pema Chodron calls this the pain of detox. So detox pain is the pain or discomfort that is there when we don't act out. And this is a good pain. And an analogy would be athletes who go through pain in their training, but they know that it's worth the end goal. Short-term pain for long-term gain. Or the dog who is made to wait for his food, even though he's dying to eat it. And we want to have that kind of attitude of enduring this discomfort that we experience when we feel the anger or the irritation, but we don't act on it. So think short-term pain for long-term gain. And in general, we tend to have quite a low tolerance for mental and physical discomfort. Even advertising tells us that we deserve to be comfortable, pampered, and happy all the time. But developing patience will cause us some pain, or at least restlessness or agitation, because we're so much more aware of these feelings and emotions when we don't act out on them. This is the cause behind addictions. We don't want to feel bad feelings or uncomfortable emotions, so we drink, take drugs, overeat, go shopping, watch TV, or keep ourselves very, very busy. So back to the verse with the Karna folk. They were a spiritual cult or group in India who practiced austere practices, including burning and cutting themselves, as a spiritual path. Shanti Devi actually refers to them as meaningless austerities because he did not believe that they what they did led to full enlightenment. But the point is, if these karna people can endure such painful, meaningless austerities, why are we so timid with enduring our discomfort and agitation on our spiritual path? So this patient working with our defilement of anger can be very uncomfortable, and although we know intellectually that deflating our ego is a good thing to do, on a gut level, we don't like it. It's painful. Shanti Deva is telling us not to be discouraged by the discomfort of detox from letting go of our old habits. We need to remind ourselves of the long-term goal, not being run by our anger, and ultimately experiencing our Buddha nature. So Shanti Devi is encouraging us not to give up when the going gets tough. There's nothing that does not grow light through habit and familiarity. Putting up with little cares, I'll train myself to bear with great adversity. It's a good idea to start working with the smaller irritations in order to eventually be able to cope with the larger ones. And it's much more challenging to respond skillfully in times of great adversity, so we can practice with the small ones first. A Tibetan teacher coined the phrase bourgeois suffering, and this relates to those fairly minor inconveniences in life, like when we get a seat in the middle of a row on an airplane when we've asked for the aisle seat, or we get to our favorite eating place and it's closed. Bourgeois suffering would cover things like the weather, when it's not to our liking, insect bites, or having a cold. We have a choice when we become aware of our irritation. We can escalate the situation by getting angry and spinning stories, which is what we usually do, or we can practice being aware of our irritation, feel the sensations in our body, drop the storylines, and not let it escalate. Another thing we can do is to laugh at ourselves, at least for the lightweight stuff. All things then depend on something else. On this depends the fact that none are independent. Knowing this, we will not be annoyed by objects that resemble magical appearances. This verse is part of a section that deals with the multiple causes and conditions that create any situation. And if we can remember this, it might help us to take things less personally or to have more compassion for ourselves when we get provoked. I had a personal teaching on this recently when my partner lost his temper over what I thought was something very minor that I had done. However, when we both had a chance to cool down and enough to talk about it, it turned out that there had been several other causes for his anger, and most that had nothing to do with me. And that certainly helped me to diffuse my anger and the hurt I felt. But it was also a good example of the multiple causes and conditions behind any action or any situation. We can never know what the whole picture is or what's behind the scenes. The second two lines, knowing this, we will not be annoyed by objects that resemble magical appearances, refers to the teachings on emptiness. Nothing is as it appears. If we can reflect on the insubstantiality of things, then we can see the craziness of getting so provoked and angry. If those who are like wanton children are by nature prone to injure others, what point is there in being angry, like resenting fire for its heat? And if their faults are fleeting and contingent, if living beings are by nature wholesome, it's likewise senseless to resent them, as well be angry at the sky for having clouds. This is about the futility of anger and the view of human nature. That is it good or is it bad? In the first verse, Shantideva is saying that if our viewpoint is that we're basically bad, like wanton children, getting angry is like resenting fire for being hot. It's pretty pointless, because that's just the way it is, or it's just the way we are or they are. But if you believe that beings are good and basically wholesome, and that their faults are fleeting and contingent, then it's also silly to get angry at them. It's like resenting the sky for having clouds in it. We should all give each other a break when someone is having a bad hair day, or when we get provoked. It's temporary. So the Buddha's viewpoint is that we are basically good. We all have Buddha nature. But whether you believe that beings are good or bad, these ideas are ones that we can bring up on the spot to give us some kind of perspective. And either opinion, good or bad, will lead to the same conclusion. And also, just the effort again to pause creates space and allows us to change our response or behaviors, and that's always helpful. I, it was, who in the past did harm to beings such as these, and so when others do me mischief, it is only just that they should injure me. This refers to karma. What goes around comes around, or because of that, this. Karma, or our former deeds, is another of the factors that cause any event, including painful ones. For Westerners, especially those new to the concept of karma, this can be confusing, as they associate karma with retribution or punishment. But this is a misunderstanding. It's simply cause and effect. If you hurt someone, you will one day experience the same pain of being hurt. Of course, it's not always immediate, and you can't always see the relationship so clearly. And Pema Chodron had a really great example of this I want to share with you. When at the weekend, she was on the tape that I have, she was saying that she's been married twice. She has children, grandchildren, but she was married to her first husband, had two children, maybe three, but she left him for another man, and she said she realized she did it, you know, not skillfully, and she caused him a lot of harm, and the children a lot of hurt, but she did it because she thought she was, you know, she was going to a better place, she was going to be happier. She says, ha ha. 8 years later, her second husband did the same thing to her. And he left her in the same fashion. And she said, you know, this is before she had encountered the teachings. So she said, but I knew that, you know, I could see that she could see that cause and effect. She realized, she said, I knew that I was being made to feel the pain of what I had caused my first husband. And she said, I was so grateful that I was young enough, she was in her late 30s, that I could, you know, get through this really bad period, and I'd be okay. And it was interesting because I thought, that's amazing. I mean, she never heard the teaching, but she immediately saw this connection, which a lot of us can't see even with the teachings. But I thought it was a really good example of, you know, sort of what goes around comes around. The important thing is to realize that although we can't change the past events or factors leading to this moment, the only thing we can control is how we respond in any moment to any given situation. And with a situation that triggers our anger, we have an opportunity to either strengthen our negative habit of getting provoked, escalating the situation and acting out, or we can practice patience with our awareness. In doing this, we affect our future karma in a positive way. It reminds me of that saying, the buck stops here. We take responsibility fully for our actions, which includes those in the past as well as the present. This can take a lot of courage. And I think a good example of that would be the freedom riders in the early 60s, the whites and the African Americans who traveled, this is in the States, when they traveled to places in the American South to challenge the laws of segregation. I find it very inspiring because they were treated horribly. You know, they were beaten, their buses were set on fire, they were attacked by dogs, they were jailed. But they didn't retaliate. At least that was, I mean, you know, they mostly didn't retaliate. Their whole thing was not to retaliate when this happened. That it was all about, well, I don't want to say putting up with it, but it was that idea of it just not acting back out, not getting provoked and acting back out at their oppressors. Now, that's a pretty extreme example of practicing patience, but points to the courage it can take not to retaliate or not to act out or speak out from a place of anger. So to recap, anger causes harm and suffering. The most effective way to work with anger is to cultivate patience. And Shanti Davis starts with making a case for working with this klesha. Then he explains the three categories of patience. The patience that comes from reframing our attitude towards pain. And the most important thing to remember here is that pain of detox that comes with cultivating patience. That we will feel discomfort, agitation, restlessness, and emotional or even physical pain when we stop acting out from our anger. This is a good pain. The patience that comes from seeing the complex reality of any situation, that everything is interdependent and is a result of complex causes and conditions, and is ultimately empty. The patience that comes from developing tolerance, appreciating our basic goodness, and giving each other a break when we have our temporary transgressions or meltdowns. So I'd like to close with a verse from the last chapter in Shanti Davis' text, which is a verse we chanted at the end of each day at that weekend in Seattle. This verse is said to be a favorite of the Dalai Lama. And more than any other verse in this whole book, this whole text, it expresses the longing and spirit of the Bodhisattva path. And now, as long as space endures, and as long as there are beings to be found, may I continue likewise to remain to drive away the sorrows of the world. Thank you.